Today on episode 49, you'll hear from a founder whose passion became her purpose. This is the Be a Marketer podcast.
Be a Marketer.
I'm your host, Dave Charest, Director of Small Business Success at Constant Contact, and I help small business owners like you make sense of online marketing. And on this podcast, we'll explore how to find the time to be a marketer. Remember, friend, you can be a marketer, and at Constant Contact, we're here to help. Well, friend, today's guest is Aisha James, founder and creator of the Taste of Black St. Louis in, well, you guessed it, St. Louis, Missouri. Now, the Taste of Black St. Louis is a multi-sensory food experience created to bring local communities and visitors together for a full weekend of culture, tasting, and shopping, while simultaneously bringing awareness to the city's Black culinary talents by shining a light on Black-owned businesses within the region. Now, I just want to give you a sense of the growth of this festival. Now, in 2018, the festival started with 45 vendors and 7,000 attendees. In 2019, 60 vendors and 16,000 attendees. 2020, well, pandemic, no festival. But when 2021 rolls in, it becomes a three-day festival with 100 vendors and 83,000 attendees, generating hundreds of thousands of dollars for the city of St. Louis. In 2022, Aisha did something, well, many entrepreneurs wouldn't think of doing. She hit pause on the festival. Why? Let's pick up the conversation there.
Well, the situation that we had with that is that we actually grew fairly quickly. And what I historically was doing was everything that those vendors paid me, I put back into the Taste of Black St. Louis. But when we grew as fast as we did from, you can see, going from 16,000 people to 83,000 people, your budget gets a lot bigger. And honestly, we just weren't ready to be able to handle that. So instead of watering down the product that we put out, or I want to say put product, our platform, we decided to basically go back to the drawing board and say, hey, you know, let's take a pause this year and basically come back stronger. And that was what we did the next following year in 2023. All of our vendors and everybody supported us. So we were very much so happy that people understood that, hey, we just had to take a moment and go back to the drawing board to be able to get this right.
So we're on track for 2024?
Yes, we are. We're on track for 2024. We're coming back. Still our 3 days. We will be back downtown again across from City Hall in Soldiers Memorial. And those vendors, they're actually waiting for me to come back. I've sent out a lot of the information now, just letting them know the applications and things of that nature are open. And they're excited and they're ready.
This is pretty exciting, just in terms of, at least from my perspective, but I'm sure it's going to be from your perspective as well, right? But like, you started this thing, and if I'm remembering correctly from the last time we talked, this was kind of like, hey, I think you were inspired by seeing something similar in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. And yes. You were like, hey, this looks like a cool idea. And then your friends were like, okay, cool. But let us know when you do it.
Yeah.
And so what does that then feel like to be at this place where, I mean, this thing is huge now. I mean, yes. What is that feeling for you?
The feeling for me is surreal at times. I have friends, actually one of my very good friends, he celebrated his birthday yesterday and I seen him at dinner. Every time he sees me, he calls me Miss Taste of Black St. Louis, even though I'm one of his good friends. I'm like, Tony. But he's like, Miss Taste of Black St. Louis. I'm like, stop it. But he remembers when I was just talking about this. That's what he always just keeps saying. I remember when you were just telling me about what you wanted to happen and to see you now and it being one of the largest Black food festivals in the city of St. Louis. And then we looked up and it was part of Google that we're the largest Black owned food festival within the Midwest. There are other food festivals, but we're solely Black owned. So to see that and to see us grow is just the same surreal feeling that I have when I see some of my first vendors that started off with me in a 10 by 10 tent. And then they send me messages or invitations to they're doing a grand opening for a brick and mortar, or they're coming back with a food truck. So to see these visions come to play, these dreams come to fruition is very much so surreal.
So running an event is no easy task. And, right. And yeah, I don't have to tell you that. And you typically, I mean, these things are like, as soon as you kind of have one kick off, you're already planning the next one. And so what is that process like? Because you're doing this in addition to your day job, right? And so
correct. Yes.
How do you find the time to kind of make this happen?
Through having an amazing team. We are always keeping, as we call it, this train rolling. Once we are actually stopping with having that event for this year, like when we finish with the Taste of Black St. Louis for 2024, we'll probably take a couple of weeks off. And then October, we're sending out the contact. We're sending out our blast to let them know, hey, the vendor application for 2025 will be open. At the same time that we're sending out an exit survey for them to see how or what we did well and what can we do different for them, areas of opportunity. So all of those things are coming out simultaneously. If people want to take the opportunity to be able to sign up at that time, or, you know, that's really just what we're doing. We keep a lot of communication out to those vendors.
Is there a world where this becomes the thing that you are doing full time?
In a perfect world, yes. I am slowly merging them together outside of me being what I do with, I'm a mortgage operations manager for one of the largest banks. And I am slowly moving away from that and moving into the project management role, which is ideally what the Taste of Black St. Louis actually is. Mm. In corporate America, I now have other financial institutions or actual Fortune 500 companies who want me to bring little versions of the taste to them culturally. So we call them a taste of culture.
Oh, wow.
And it's becoming more of a thing for me. I just suppose it's a taste being a hobby or on the side of business, but now becoming a part of my career that I'm actually watching develop now. And it's almost like watching the taste develop.
So again, here's another situation where I feel like, okay, wow. Like, did you ever think that moving from, okay, I guess I'm going to do this now because my friends have made me the person that has to do it. And then mm-hmm. to get to this point where, again, no background in running events, right? Like other than your family gathering. So mm-hmm. just walk me through like what's going through your mind now that it's like, okay, like to be in this place where you're saying like, yeah, I might be moving towards where this is the thing that I'm doing. And it's even bigger than that.
Well, I knew that I wanted to go back to school. I had a lot of my background within nursing and things of that nature. That was a lot of my part of my degree was, but I couldn't stop working and then go and be an RN or go to have clinicals. So I wanted to flip my degree into something that was useful in what I was doing now. And being as that I'm doing all this stuff with entrepreneurs, I wanted to decide I would get a bachelor's degree in business administration. And then it had a certification with project management. I'm like, okay. So that's actually last year when we postponed the taste that I had my aha moment, because that was where I was getting my capstone for my project management. It was just looking like, this is all the stuff that I needed to know for the taste the previous year or 6 months before. And now I'm learning it now and implementing it now into it, which I feel was that moment where God said you had to take that pause so that I can give you time to learn this stuff. So now next year you'll be better. And watching all of this unfold is, I can't say any other word but surreal. It's the best thing that I could have ever. Yeah. Sometimes I really take a breath and just be like, David, is this my life? is this my life? Like watching you move from your passion into your purpose is definitely an aha moment. And yeah, I thank God every day that I'm able to slowly move into that and not in a rush. Because patience is everything.
So where you are now, what are you kind of running into or what are you seeing as your challenges as you try to execute for this year?
Sponsorship. Even though the taste is as big as it is, it's still funded by the vendors. We still have other entities that are, I don't want to say competition, I just say other events or options that people have that are on that same day with me. And they have major sponsorship, whereas mine's is still, I'm considered, I guess you can say, the little guy that makes big numbers is what someone just told me. it's the sponsorship and the funding. So I just make sure that my budget skills are on point. And because every dollar counts, everything that the vendors pay to me, we put into it. And we try our best to make sure as pushing the marketing to have a certain number of vendors so that we're able to pay for everything to support the platform. And that's just been the biggest hurdle. People come, the attendees are there, the participants are there. It's just to getting the funding, which is why the major reason why I haven't been able to step away from my, I guess you can say, regular job.
Sure.
Because the taste is not supporting itself, I guess you could say.
Gotcha. You mentioned your team earlier. Mm-hmm. What does that look like today versus when you started?
Well, it has grown. It went from me and another young lady to then me by myself for about 3 years. And then now it has grown to about 10 people. And they're my friends. And they just have the same, they see the actual vision that I have. And they have the same passion that I have as well for the taste and love for it. Their volunteerism and help for me is like no other. And I definitely wouldn't be where I am at this point with the taste without those people that I have, my circle that I have around me.
What do you love most about running the event?
There are two things. One, I love seeing people come back in different spaces. Like I do have one vendor. She started off with me in 2018. She was a 10 by 10 tent to watch her grow into a food truck. She's now a food truck when she comes back each year. And then she just actually sent me an invitation to her having now the food truck and a brick and mortar. So, but watching them, you know, develop. And then the other side of that is watching the vendors sell out each day. We have a almost unspoken ceremony. When the vendors begin to sell out, you'll see their tents lower. So each one of those tents, they start going down, or they'll come up and let the DJ know, you know, I'm sold out for the day. And it's a celebration as opposed to it being something bad. So to watch these people completely come back and say, Aisha, you know, I made X amount of dollars, you know, I'm able to have a great Christmas, or I'm going on vacation after this, or I'm able to move out of town, or not even move out of town, but to set my family up for that third or fourth quarter, that's the most fulfilling part of it.
Do you get together with, you know, the people that are helping you out with this, and where do you sit in a room by yourself? Do you set up like goals for the event each year, or how do you approach that?
What we do is we actually want to see how we can community outreach, because we want to make sure that not only are we creating this platform for these small Black-owned businesses, but we also want to make sure that we're keeping in touch with the community and what the community needs. Last year was our first year that we were actually in open space, if that makes sense. Previous years, we were in a private public park. It's a public park owned by the city, but it's privately ran. So that was a controlled area. And then we were at City Foundry, which is private property, and that was a controlled area. Well, last year, we were right across the street from City Hall, and that area had a lot of homelessness within it. So we wanted to make sure, we went down a couple of weeks before, we fed the homeless prior to that, us actually having our festival. And then that week before, we asked for permission, because we wanted to make sure that they knew that we weren't just going to be another festival that was just going to come down, be in this area, tell you you were going to be basically uprooted from where you were, and then leave, not leaving them with anything. So we make sure that we have community outreach. We sit in a room and we say, what does this area need? And what does the city of St. Louis need? So we try our best to make sure that we have those programs encompassed with the platform, because when you get that many people together, you want to make sure that you're having a call of action to it in this, and that you're saying something purposefully. I guess you can, that's not a word, but you're making a point. You're not just gathering just for those 3 days, but you're getting the ear. We have voter registration. Now, we do a lot of things that are intentional that are affecting the Black and brown people within that community, because we know that you really only get one shot at it. So my team, we are very much so intentional with the planning of the Taste of Black St. Louis. And then we also want to see what those vendors have needed from the feedback that they provide back to us in those exit surveys. What are you needing? What did you like? What are you needing? Are you needing startup classes, entrepreneurial classes? Do you need help with starting your business? We've seen that a lot of the businesses did not have insurance. So we wanted to make sure within our actual packet that we get them a broker, and she's getting them affordable insurance, needing help with the permits, making sure not only are they able to be permitted for the Taste of Black St. Louis, but any other festival that they want to be prepared. We listen to what the vendors actually want. So a lot of that feedback we utilize from the previous year, and then just see where our areas of opportunity that we missed the previous year.
Is there anything that has surprised you, or maybe something you didn't expect that you've learned through that outreach and getting that feedback?
Well, because it is exhausting doing this.
Sure.
Yeah. And like I said, the taste is not paying for itself. Well, it does. It breaks even. So getting that, I guess you can say, strength to do it again. When you see those surveys that come back to say thank you, and I can't wait to see you next year, or those vendors, they reach out to you, that's what makes me to keep going. And that's the thing that I keep seeing over and over again, that it's still needed. I keep thinking that possibly that it's not, but every year we're being told that it's needed, and we can't wait for you to come back. And not only by the vendors, but there's people that say, I was in town and I was out of town and I missed it, or I was in town and I'm coming back in town again for it. So yeah, the need is what surprises me the most.
What would you say then does, as you mentioned, it's exhausting doing this. So what does a typical day look like for you as you're planning and getting this event off the floor?
Well, a typical day for me is usually if it's Monday through Friday, I'm working my regular job, but that's from 6 to 3:30. But then the Taste of Black St. Louis, I usually cut out for us that will go from 5 to 8 each day. And we're making sure we're answering back emails from the vendors during our peak time. Like now, we're getting responses in. People are paying. People are signing up. We're getting DocuSigns out to them. We're getting their vendor applications and things out to them, payment links. So it's nonstop. And we try to set a time frame so that we're keeping business hours from 5 to 8. Our vendors, they sometimes, I don't want to say needy, but they have a lot of questions. A lot of them are scared. They know the lines and the number of attendees that come in. They want to step out on faith, but then they don't feel like they may be capable of doing it. So it's a lot of encouragement that we do, that you can do this and that we'll walk you through it and that we're here for you. And sometimes that can go until 9, 10 o'clock and we'll wake up to emails again, because people are still having questions. Even we go to bed or we get applications overnight. So we try to make sure that we have that time for ourselves and that we have to cut it off. But sometimes my friends will call me in the middle of the night and just like, I've been answering questions all night. I got to go to bed. I'm just like, you getting ready to go to work. So it's the dedication. It definitely is. And we try and have those time frames, but the closer that it gets, it's a lot of street planning, street closures, and just basically letting everything fall into place that we planned out.
So I want to jump into some specifics here, just in terms of how you think about communicating with all of these balls in the air that you really do have to get keep going and do all that. But before I get there, what do you do for fun in all of this?
You should ask my husband. He's like, we haven't had any fun. What do I do for fun? Honestly, I go to a lot of pop-up shops to see the vendors. When they're sending me flyers to say, hey, Aisha, I'm participating here, I go out and I shop with them. They have grand openings. I try my best to go out and shop with those. Networking events, coffee talks, just a lot of different things I do for fun. I also will go bowl. I hang out with my family and my friends. Oh, and the biggest thing is we do Sunday dinner. Every Sunday, we have family and friends over. My husband is a caterer, so he cooks no matter what on Sundays. And if you want to stop by, you can come by and get something to eat. If you want us to tell, you know, hey, I don't want to talk to anybody, I want just a plate, we bring food out to you. But it's that time for you to unwind with your family and friends and just kind of let your hair down and get ready for the rest of the week, kind of recharge you for the rest of the week. That's my fun thing.
When you think about the years you've been doing this and even, you know, prior in your regular day-to-day life, what would you say is the biggest thing that you've learned over the years that really helps you with executing this today?
Time management. To have the time management and getting the communication out as soon as possible, that is what has helped me to be able to execute this. Because I have so many things that I do throughout the day and my team says that I keep throwing another project on them, I have to make sure that I keep up with a digital planner so that I'm not overlapping things and that I'm getting things out in a timely manner. And then scheduling the communication out to them within a timely manner so that they have time to be able to prepare. I know a lot of these vendors, they kind of started scheduling their things, their festivals now. So knowing that they have my date early, they already know, okay, I'm doing a Taste of Black St. Louis September 13th, 14th, and 15th of this year. That's it. But just having that communication and time management is what helps me to execute.
So talk to me a little bit about that, right? Because one of the most difficult things that I think you find from a small business perspective, because at the end of the day, this is what it is, right? Do you go through that process of, do you actually schedule marketing pieces in? And I say marketing because, like, I think really when I'm thinking about the work that you do, is a portion of it is like broadcast messaging, but a lot of it seems to be messaging just back and forth, right? Just in terms of communication. But yeah, would you go as far as saying like, okay, these are the communications we need to get out in terms of like, these are the dates our vendors need to know. These are the dates that, you know, sponsorship stuff, like we have to communicate with them. Because I would imagine you have vendors, you have sponsors, internal vendors as well. You have volunteers, mm-hmm. attend, like you have all of these people that you really do need to communicate with just to make this thing happen. And so are you scheduling? Are you creating a timeline? Like, what does that look like to make sure that you're hitting all of these right things in terms of the time management?
Well, the first communication, it's a timeline that we have to get out. So yeah. The first communication we are normally going to get out is to the sponsors, because they are the ones that their budget actually begins to go out in October for the next previous year. So we want to get in communication with them as soon as the end of the Taste is actually happening to say, hey, this is what our 2024 sponsorship package looks like. We hate that you missed for 2023. And just come on board, see if we can schedule a meeting the top of the year because some of them are kind of not doing it at that time. But then we also want to let the vendors know what the date for 2024 is going to be, what the next following year is going to be, so that they can start thinking, hey, are you ready to sign up now? If not, just keeping that communication with them. Our internal partners or internal vendors that we've used as far as like porta potties and staging and things of that nature, just at that time wanting to say, hey, we thank you for the services this year. If they were great, we want to go ahead and move and see if we're able to set something up with you at the early, first part of the year, because we're going to be doing it off again. Just keeping the communication open with them to let them know, hey, I would like to book with you next year. And they're already excited once you're there pulling off as far as with taking things down. That next following Monday is really busy for me because I'm cleaning up loose ends and just basically thanking people and saying, hey, we would like to go ahead and work with you the next following year. So it's just, I guess, a beautiful song and dance that you have to do with people with communicating and then following up on those communications. So now everything has been followed up on and we're now saying, hey, we're set, we're ready to go, whether you're looking like for this year. And we've already laid the foundation of letting them know we would like to work with them, but following up now. Yeah. So it's a timeline that we basically follow to try and make sure that we get everything out within a timely manner.
So within Constant Contact, specifically when you're thinking about your communications and things like that, are you creating lists for each of these groups that you have to communicate mm-hmm. with? Okay. You are doing that.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So all of my vendors, we have a complete list of vendors. So it's a complete Taste of Black St. Louis vendors. Then we have them categorized each by year. We also then have the entertainers. So entertainment, we may have had hosts. We have chefs that we have used as far as with demos. We also have our sponsorship list. I'm trying to think of all the lists. We have our volunteer list. And then we actually have a huge list that when we do free tickets on Eventbrite. And those are just email addresses that we want to be able to blast back out to them to say, hey, come back out and shop with these vendors. And that's just a separate list from the actual vendors that we would send out to let them know the Taste of Black St. Louis is coming the next following year. We hope to see you. And we also may have some VIP things or that nature, what they can sign up for. So we have a lot of lists of Constant Contact. I think I have over 10,000 email addresses on Constant Contact.
That's amazing. What would you say then are your most important, as you're thinking about getting this off the ground and making this work and having a great event come showtime, right, so to speak, mm-hmm. what would you say are your most important marketing tools and channels? Like, what are you using to kind of get the word out about this?
Constant Contact a lot. Getting the word out with those email addresses that we've had from previous people that have signed up that we've captured, we utilize that a lot to just say it's a save the date to send out. For me, I know that that drives a lot of attendees into the Taste of Black St. Louis each year. And then we try to capture more, even though we're using Eventbrite, it's just us capturing that. And then we have it to where I know we haven't merged with Constant Contact, so where we can send them out together. Mm-hmm. So cross-functioning those platforms has been amazing. Also utilizing the text message side of it as well. We also use social media where we can integrate it with Constant Contact with Facebook. Also with we have an Instagram page. And then we do have a Facebook group that has over 5,000 people in it as well. So we utilize as much free social media that we can be able to use to gather all of those actual email addresses together and then pumping them out, dumping them into Constant Contact and then sending that blast out to them for just another round to get the word out. And we also run ads too on Facebook and Instagram.
Excellent. I'm curious, do you run any of those ads through Constant Contact or are you just doing it proper on the site?
No, we build a lot of the ads. I have a technology person. Oh, she's one of my friends, Talia. She actually built a lot of the ads through Constant Contact.
Oh, cool.
And then sent them out. She built out a newsletter through Constant Contact as well. She utilized a lot of the space in just a lot of the functionalities with Constant Contact. And then setting them on a timer. There were things that she was building and she was like, it's not ready to go out. Like now we have the scheduling for to say that the applications and things that are ready, just being able to just hit that button and then different flyers that come out each time of the year. It's Black History Month, or we have it's a women's celebration of women. I think that's for next month. You know, Black Music Month was in June. So just basically making sure we're keeping each month that they're celebrating ethnicity or something like that. We can basically coincide that with an actual Taste of Black St. Louis flyer and then schedule it once it's already built in the beginning of the year.
Got it. You mentioned groups, mm-hmm. your Facebook group. What have you been finding with that? I think that's probably one of those things that people don't talk a lot about, but I'm wondering how valuable you're finding that, because I think those can actually be a really great resource for people. So tell me a little bit about your experience with a group.
I like the Facebook group, but what I found is that letting the Facebook group itself do the automation as far as those letting people, I guess you can say the admission of letting people in.
Okay.
I find it better that I have more control over that as opposed to just letting an actual system do it. And the reason why I'm saying that is a lot of Facebook groups will grow. You get up to 100, 200,000 people in there, and all of a sudden now the group doesn't exist anymore because you had a hacker or whatever come in, and now the hard work of everything you had is gone.
Yeah.
We've been able to maintain the group as long as we've had it because I have moderators that are live people and they are admitting and approving and disagreeing with people. So we're able to keep the content of that group as what it is. It's based for entrepreneurs. It's not meant for anyone to come in with any other contact outside of that. So we do screen a lot of it and just make sure that it stays pure to the content that we want in there, as opposed to just letting the automation system take over and you're getting in a lot of bad stuff. So
yeah. So you brought up an interesting point just in terms of, like, you know, somebody hacks the group and then you kind of lose all that work that you've done. It's one of the reasons why we're very adamant about making sure that people don't rely solely on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm curious, are you doing anything to make it known that, hey, we have this email list to get those interested parties over from those groups or just from social in general, just in terms of, like, kind of growing your contact list and making sure that you're able to kind of take ownership of that and have direct contact with these people? Are you doing any specific items in that sense?
Well, Facebook has made it very, very hard for you to be able to get them. We request for, we ask for actual email addresses when people sign up for the group, but Facebook has made it very much so hard to be able to get that contact list. I think I've seen little videos on YouTube to be able to try and extract that information, but we have not been successful as far as we're getting it yet. So we don't solely actually rely on that for the contact portion of it. We do with Eventbrite and a cross function of Constant Contact. Holding all of those emails. We had just haven't been able to extract that yet from Facebook. So it's just more so of us being able to post and network within the group is what we're doing, making sure that content stays to what the Taste of Black St. Louis actual platform is meant for.
What would it be like trying to run this event without Constant Contact?
You know what? It would honestly, it wouldn't be very good. It wouldn't be as effective. I will tell you, Constant Contact helped me out a lot last year. I had a lot of vendors who told me that they did not receive information that I know that we sent out to them, very pertinent information about vendor meetings, things that they needed to sign up for, and we sent out several emails. So you guys are very much so instrumental in me being able to go back to this vendor and say, hey, we sent it to you. I can see when we sent it to you, and A, you never opened it up because we get that data back, or B, you opened it up and you never responded back. And a lot of the vendors were kind of dumbfounded, like, how can you see? You can't see into my email. I'm like, well, I have a system that we use is Constant Contact. You actually can use this too as a vendor, but we were able to see that when you open up and when you don't open it up. So that actually helped me a lot.
So if you had a business that was maybe similar, or even just, I think of the vendors that come to you, and, you know, you just said recently that that would be something that would be helpful to you too, right? So, like, what would be your number one tip for one of those businesses if they were going to use Constant Contact?
Well, we have some vendors that, candle makers, retail vendors, they are at with pop-up shops. We let them know that, hey, you can utilize this because those pop-up shops are not always in the same space, or even with the vendors with food trucks, you can send out that text to say, hey, I'm going to be at this. Come and shop with me here. Or the food trucks that are on the go, I'm going to be serving breakfast or dinner at this location, and you can come and support me in this way. So we kind of let them know that the Constant Contact is real time for them. And those vendors who actually are within the retail space, you can set up your newsletters, you can set up like a customer appreciation, someone that's setting, that's always coming to shop with you. We just let them know that it's so many different tools and facets that you can use with Constant Contact that is definitely beneficial for them to sign up for it.
Is there something that you like most about Constant Contact?
I like the part, the data that shows me when the people don't open up the emails. That's my favorite part, honestly, though. And it's funny because every time I send something out, even I don't care if it's in the middle of the night, I just sit and watch that. Watch the, it goes out, how many people open it, how would it bounce back? I don't know what it is. I'm an analytical person. So seeing that actual hard data in real time is very, it's exciting to me. I know it's almost like a nerd, but it's exciting to me to see it go out and to see people open it up. Yeah. And then it also gives me the information to be able to go back and if it's vendors with the email addresses that are bouncing back, to possibly reach out onto a phone number and say, hey, you know, we sent some communication out to you and it bounced back. Do you have a better email address? Because we want to get this information to you. So I really like that part.
Well, tell me a little bit about the management of things. Like, how often are you in there just in terms of just managing the database? What is your process for that?
Managing the database, we always want to go back in and just check and make sure that everything is up to date. We're always importing more email addresses that we get, because the good thing with Constant Contact, it'll weed out those duplicate email addresses if you already have them. So sometimes we'll find an old email list and be like, oh, do we have these? And I'm like, well, you can just go ahead and, you know, import it in, because if they're duplicates, it'll go ahead and weed it out. But we're in the database a lot, especially around this time, because we're sending out a lot of information to just say, hey, you know, everything is going on. This is kind of like laying the foundation for what's going to happen in September. So usually things will cool down once we get that actual list of the vendors. Then we send out communications to let them know, hey, here's a newsletter, because we get everyone in another application called Band. And that's the housing of where we send out everything and keep them in constant contact with us. Meetings that we may have, we schedule everything within there as well. So we're in there quite frequently now. And then it kind of dies down the remainder part of the year, because we're not sending as much communication at that time. We're more so in meetings with them.
Right, right. So I want to shift just to think specifically about, just in terms of getting the word out about the event. What does that look like for you? And I think that probably expands beyond just email and the things that you do, but like, how do you think about that? And how do you make sure that the community knows that this event is happening?
Well, every opportunity that I get, any platform I'm invited to, I try to go to different actual events. Like I said, we do coffee talks. Anytime that I'm able to interact with entrepreneurs, I'm always speaking about the Taste of Black St. Louis. Radio, I go on TV. Any way that I'm able to speak in magazines, we have local newspapers here, any way that I am able to get that information out. And also we'll utilize social media, the free platform, to go live and just say, hey, you know, this is what's going on with the Taste of Black St. Louis. This is where I'm at. Lately, we have been getting a lot of recognition from the city and well as myself. I just last week was nominated by the local radio station as one of the Hot 28 for Black History Month. They wanted to actually showcase Native St. Louis natives that they felt made an impact within the city. So African Americans, and I was nominated Hot 28, one of those Hot 28 influential natives of St. Louis. Thank you. On the list of like Justin Tatum and Cedric the Entertainer, I think it was, I don't want to say Sexy Red, because yeah. So, I mean, just sitting on that list with some great other people, it was astounding. And being able to go on a radio and talk about the Taste of Black St. Louis at any time, I'm always trying to utilize any platform to get the word out about the Taste of Black St. Louis.
What would be your best piece of advice for, let's say, another St. Louis native getting started in business and trying to make the impact? And I think, you know, you have made this amazing impact in the community. What would be your best piece of advice to them?
Remember why you started and understand that there's going to be so many bumps in the road, but always remember why you started and stay true to that. I know that I'm doing this for St. Louis because I love St. Louis. This is a city that I was born and raised in, and I know it's getting a lot of flack because we're going through our own little pain point right now, but I feel like it's no different than any other city. So stay faithful. And just know it gets greater later. So you just have to keep pushing forward. Yeah.
Well, friend, let's recap some items from that discussion. Number one, collect feedback. Aisha talks about how she sends out an exit survey to her vendors so she and her team can see what they did well and learn where there are areas of opportunity to do better. Get obsessive about your customer's experience. Use the survey block to collect feedback from within your Constant Contact emails. Number two, get your communication timeline together. Everything is based around what you have to say when to make sure people know what they need to know when they need to know it. Don't just wing it. Use a calendar so you can plan your upcoming communications to get the word out. P.S. You can even use the marketing calendar right within your Constant Contact account. Number three, organize your contacts. Now, Aisha has vendors, attendees, sponsors, and more to communicate with. And she's able to send pertinent information to each group versus sending everything to everyone. Now, the better you organize your contacts, the more relevant information that you can send, and the better your overall metrics become. So don't forget to use the list and segmentation tools within your Constant Contact account. Here's your action item for today. Did you know that you can manage and market events from within your Constant Contact account? Well, you can. And I'll include a link in the show notes so you can find out more about what's possible. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Be a Marketer podcast. If you have questions or feedback, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me directly at dave.charest@constantcontact.com. If you did enjoy today's episode, please take a moment to leave us a review. Your honest feedback will help other small business marketers like yourself find the show. Well, friend, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and continued success to you and your business.